All right, another episode of the podcast, episode 2 under our new moniker of Nashville Talks with Taylor Jones. Thank you guys for bearing with me as I go through, you know, some growing pains here trying to take my thing, my podcast to the next level. Don't really have a clue, but I'm looking for a clue. So when I find a clue, I'll let you know. We're just feeling around in the dark like, you know what I'm saying? Like two blind guys trying to find the light there. That's what we're trying to do. So I heard something funny the other day, you know, when you're real busy or whatever, and this guy said, well, man with one ass can't ride two horses. I said, well, hey, you know, you're right about that. So don't try to be everywhere all at the same time, people. Just do one thing at a time. Don't spread yourself too thin. So anyway, I say all that, and then I ride like three or four horses every day trying to make this whole life make sense. But alas, still only one, you know, one rear end here to make it happen. So sorry, I got a little off the page on that, but I thought that was funny, and it made my dad laugh this morning, so I figured I'd share it with y'all. He popped big time. So so what's going on around here in Nashville today? It's starting to, it was cool yesterday, and now it's kind of warming up again. So I'm in this weird place of not knowing what to wear every day, because you get up in the morning and it's kind of chilly, but by noon it's hot. So if you wore a long sleeve shirt or a beanie or something, by noon you're sweating and you have to like figure that out and go without something, you know? So I'm not the best at picking out clothes anyway, but it's especially hard now because it's freezing at night and then it's hot during noon lunch hour and cold in the morning. I don't know. So we're working with it. We're dealing with the seasons. It's not like this happens every year or anything, and we should be used to it. But we're working through. So what's new around here? So what is today? Today is Wednesday, and it's my wedding anniversary. How about that? 3 years. Ian, that means it's 3 years. Wait a minute. Come over here, Ian. You need a microphone. I want to introduce you guys to somebody. Ian Stewart's one of my oldest friends, and he's helping me take the podcast to the next level. He's the one that's mixing and mastering this thing and going to insert a song maybe later too. So, but Ian was supposed to come to my wedding, but what happened to you the week prior to my wedding?
I showed up at the venue in a panic because I was about 5 minutes late, couldn't find anybody. It was in a section of this kind of an office park where lots of different doors, different buildings, had Marathon no idea buildings. Where to go. And finally, I'm calling Taylor's dad. I'm calling Taylor's brother. Nobody's answering. I'm figuring, of course they're not, because they're in the wedding party. Finally, at one point, I text Taylor to say, hey,
I'm
man.
On the
road. I text him to say, sorry, I couldn't make it in. I tried to find you guys. And he said, Ian, it's next week. So I was 5 minutes late, 1 week early.
Yes. And then when it came down to the wedding, you got sick.
I got the flu like the day of the wedding.
Yeah, so it was like, it was
5 minutes late, 1 week early.
Yeah. I think I was on the road. I don't remember, but I remember getting this voicemail and he was like, well, I'm at your wedding, but I'm not at your wedding. I'm trying to find your wedding. So yeah, that's a day in the life with Ian over there. 1 week early, 5 minutes late. We got this picture of me and Kyla at the stairs in the house, and Ian goes into my house first time he sees that picture. He goes, I've been to them stairs. And I was like, yeah, really? He goes, yeah, I was a week early to your wedding, remember? I was like, yeah, that's true, that's right. So 3 years ago, 2013, me and Kyla got married. I wish she was here right now. She could join the podcast and tell me how much she's learned in 3 years, and how much she regrets that whole decision and everything. So, but no, in seriousness, we're thankful and in a really good spot, and learned a lot in 3 years about each other and how to treat each other and how to listen and how to, you know, do all these things that you don't have to do when you're single. You know, consider other people's feelings as if they're your own. It's kind of different. So that's what's going on here today. So the 16th, 3 years ago, right about now, I was getting married. So three ten on the old clock up there. So the weirdest thing, it's a weird thing, like right before you get married or whatever, when you're all trying to avoid each other, if that's the way you go about it, or you don't see each other that day, you know? It's like you have to find somewhere to like kind of hide or chill or whatever. But you know the bridesmaids and stuff, they're going to take over the venue. Like we just got to take off walking somewhere. And so we ended up in the freaking van watching Shark Tank. I don't know why. But Bruno's like, let's go hang out in a van, I guess. You know, and so it's like me and him and a couple more. And we're just in there just watching Shark Tank. I'm like, wow, this is not how I pictured this day at all. So that's how we, that's how what I remember about my wedding day and then finally getting it done and moving on. And then after the wedding, we went to Wendy's. Why? I don't know. Probably because we didn't have any real food at the wedding and, it went a little long. So the reception went a little long. So here we are, like she's in her freaking wedding dress. They don't even notice at the Wendy's, you know, we just ride on through and get a giant Dr. Pepper, which I spilled as soon as we got home. I knocked it off the freaking, I had it sitting on the table there, like the TV tray gimmick on the couch, and boom, knocked it off on the floor. So we kind of stumbled out the gate, but you know what I'm saying? We made it to here today. But another thing is going on is Friday. Tomorrow is Thursday. So Friday night, I'm playing in the Allman Brothers tribute band with my dad. My dad's been in Allman Brothers tribute band forever. Like since me and Ian were 16 years old or something. And so that band, I've heard a lot of that music over the years. And, you know, my dad smarted me up to it as a kid. And we studied it, tried to learn as much as we could from everything at that age. But that's just the way I approach it. I don't really listen to music so much as I study it. Like, I don't know. I don't listen to music for fun. Like when I get into something, I just listen to a ton of it and try to gather as much as I can from it and whatever you can like gain from how that person played or that person sang or whatever, then figure out who they were interested in, who are their influences. Like that's the way that's my relationship with music. It's kind of weird. Like if I'm going down the road in my car, I'm not really listening to music ever, hardly ever, unless it's something I'm trying to cram on the way to church and hear the song and try to remember how the freaking intro goes. Like that, but I don't know. It's different, but I can tell you a lot about how different bands do, and this is one of them. And so my buddy Paul is the guy that plays the drums in that band. There's two drummers in the Allman Brothers band. There's two drummers in the Allman Brothers tribute band called the Midnight Riders. And so Paul has another gig. He plays with the Long Players, and they do those, you know, LP, like long play, right? So they have this band called Long Players, and they do, I don't know what record they're doing tonight, but like they'll do like a Prince record and just play it straight through. Cool. They'll do like Hotel California and they'll play that one straight through, like whatever for the week or the month. I think they do like once a month, once every other month, and they'll do it at like Mercy Lounge or Cannery or something, and it's pretty awesome. Some of the best like studio musicians in town are in that band, and Paul plays the percussion in that band. So they already had that booked. So when this show came up and he couldn't make it, I guess they decided to give me a shot at it. So that's what's going to happen, which is interesting because these guys are the first guys I ever saw play music before ever in this room we're in now. But the drums were set up over there towards the window. And I just kind of would sit over here. Me and Bruno were kids, seven years old, 5 years old, something like that. And so it's weird now to be 27 and now we're going to play a show together, you know, when really they taught me how to play at a young age and gave me my first drum set and everything. So me and Gary Forkum from Fork's Drum Closet fame he'll be playing the first part and I'll be playing the second part, and I'll be doing my best to hang in there to try to do the J-Mo parts. J-Mo is a really, really good jazz drummer, and I am many things, but a jazz drummer I am not. I'm a fake jazz drummer. I'm a hillbilly jazz drummer. I tried to play that type of music, but I haven't ever really, you know what I'm saying, spent the hours that it takes to get good at playing jazz on drums. But this is like a crash course because you got to figure out how to, you know, play with another drummer and not get in each other's way. And I only got about 5 days to figure it out. So, but it'd be a lot of fun if you're around, if you're in the sound of my voice and you're in Nashville and you want to come hang out, do it. I want to bring a bunch of friends out. It's Soul Shine Pizza. It's a good place to hang out and eat some good food and listen to some music. So it'll be fun to play with my dad too. We've never done that before, I don't think, a whole show like that. We've done little spots here or there where I'd sit in or he'd sit in with us or something, but this will be the first time we play a whole show together. First time for everything, folks. Well, moving on. Podcast time. You're not on here to really listen to me, as far as I know. But my guest today, you are going to want to listen to. I interviewed his sister a few months ago in August, I think it was. Miss Zandy Fitzgerald. And I got Mr. Darius Fitzgerald on the horn today.
What's up?
Drummers.
Drummers unite.
Drummers in the building. Now, we promise, folks, we're not going to go into drum science or anything on you on here, but we are going to maybe talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, a little bit.
So
we have to.
Yeah, it's just how our brains work. So Darius plays in a really great band called the New Respects, and if you haven't heard of them, you need to smarten yourself up and put it in your Google and see what you come up with. They got a really great video out right now called Trouble, and just got off the road for what? How long were you gone? A month?
Yeah, about a month and a half.
Woo!
Yeah.
Man. How was that for you? Is that the first time you ever been gone for a month and a half on the road?
Yeah, it was, and it was great. I mean, I love traveling. I love getting to play music, and so combining those two things is pretty awesome to me. So it went by super fast because, A, I was having a good time, and then B, all the people out there were amazing and treating us well, and so...
Well, cool, man.
It was like external family, extra family.
So who was on the card with you?
We were on the American Prodigal tour. So it was Crowder was the headliner, and then a rapper named Tadashi. He was direct support, and we were opening.
Awesome,
opening
man.
Up the show.
Well, cool, man. So I know you guys got along with all the people great. I saw all the pictures and everything like that, and they accepted y'all into family real quick, like.
Yeah.
So it was a real good scene. Real good vibe.
It was great. It was super fun.
Well, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. So you guys did California and everything?
Yeah, we were all over the place. We were from North Carolina to California, so we played a lot of shows and a lot of driving.
Did y'all do the I told somebody one time, it's like, I've been on the entire stretch of I-40. From Wilmington clear to is it Los Angeles? Where does it end up? It ends up somewhere and over there. But we've done, did y'all do that? Did y'all take a lot of that southern route, or how'd you go do it?
Man, I don't remember the routes and the routing because I was asleep. We had the luxury of being
on
a bus.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So, yeah, all the traveling was done. I was knocked out.
Okay, that's what's up.
Yeah, so
what was that experience like?
That was great. So the last tour we did, we were in the van, and there were pros and cons. Like, honestly, I kind of missed seeing everything. Like,
yeah.
The nice thing about it, especially when we're out west, is, like, you see all the sights and, like, the mountains.
Yeah.
But I did not miss sleeping in the van. So, like, having my own bunk was amazing.
Yeah, man. Do you sleep well with somebody else driving you?
Oh, yeah.
See,
I sleep the same as I would in my own bed on the bus.
You got a good trust button then, yeah. Man. I swear, I don't trust nobody hardly. I'm raising up out of there quick if somebody wiggles just a little bit, I'm jumping up out the bed. I don't know why. I guess because I've done too much driving and almost been asleep, and I just know the truth.
Yeah.
I'm like, these drivers, they might fall asleep. Like... Man, yeah. We had this bus driver on the Sadie tour, and he said, I was on this one bus, and it burnt to the ground.
What?
That's what he said. And I said, what? Like, well, this is early in the morning, and we done drove all night. We're going to the hotel. And he's like, yeah, so-and-so was, I want to say it was Miranda's bus or somebody. But nobody was on it but him. And he was coming from somewhere and taking it back. Mm-hmm. And he said, I started smelling smoke, and I opened the window to try to clear some of that smoke out, and all that oxygen hit whatever was on fire.
Oh,
and he said,
man.
The whole bus filled up with smoke. And he said, I went from 60 to zero and just pulled over and got out of there. He said, I barely got out. He said, all I could do was sit and watch it burn. And he showed me a picture of it.
My question with that is, why was his first thought to open the window?
Because he thought it was just he didn't know it was on fire yet. So he smelled a little something like burning rubber, you know, so he was trying to like waft it out of there. You ain't thinking, you're just trying to clear out the smell and see if it was from outside or inside.
Okay, that makes sense.
What it
that
was, but buddy, when that oxygen hit, the generator caught on fire is what it was. And so freaking that bus, it burnt down. He said it burnt the aluminum wheels off that bus. He said there wasn't nothing left but the front tires.
That's crazy.
And I saw the picture, and it looked like, you know, the bus got hit by lightning. It was just a skeleton, a black, you know, charcoal skeleton of a bus.
That's nuts.
And no wheels. And he said, "That dang." I said, "Well, did it explode?" He's, "Oh, did it explode? It exploded every time them tires got hot." Pow.
So, oh, man.
I don't know. Too many stories like that. I'm like, man.
Yeah, I'm happy I didn't hear that story pre-tour.
I can't know. It's hard, man. I trust my brother, but even him, like at night, I'm like, you need me to take over? Anyway, it's hard. But so we met through church and made friends that way. And me and Kyla started coming to hear you guys play pretty early on. And
real early.
You guys are
on.
Young. How old are you now?
I'm 22.
Jeez, man. Yeah. 22, record deal, freaking on the road, doing his thing. Sounds familiar, just absent the record deal. And so what's it like, man? Give somebody, I've told this stuff a bunch of times, but like, what's it like to kind of like have, you know, to be as young as you are and with your family and just like, okay, let's go do this.
Yeah.
With music.
It's crazy to me. I mean, like, there are times when it kind of got, it can get monotonous in doing the everyday things, like when we're practicing or getting ready for like the shows and stuff. And then I was thinking about it one day and how like lucky we are. Like, I think you told me that 1% of the people who play music are playing their own music, right? And get paid.
Well, the deal is, what the statistic I heard is 1% of everybody that ever picks up an instrument, less than 1%. Ever get any money for it.
Okay.
And less than 1% of those people get paid to play their own music.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just nuts to me. I feel like growing up in Nashville, we've seen a lot of bands and been around a lot of people doing music. That's the norm here. So, playing music was just kind of like, it's what you do in Nashville. And we honestly tried to avoid it for a little while just because we've seen so many people do it, like, we're not going to do like everybody else. And then we look up and we're like 16, 17, and we're like, y'all don't play music?
What up? What you we're getting a point now where we're getting ready to have to get a job.
Right, exactly.
So what do y'all want to do here? What, can we avoid that?
Right.
What? How can we avoid this?
And it worked. And that's the craziest thing to me. I remember right around college time, I went to Columbia State for like 2 semesters. I kind of knew that I wasn't going to stick around. And we were like, asked our parents, we were like, can we just take 6 months and like really dedicate and practice and see what happens with music? And they're like, sure. Probably in the back of their heads, like 6 months is not a lot of time. They'll end up back in school.
They'll fizzle out.
Yeah. And so we did. And then at the end of that time, we had like the record label and all that jazz. And so you're like, I guess I'm not going back to school. So it worked.
Literally in 6 months, man, y'all went from point A to point B. And, you know, from the garage to the, you know, to the record deal table, man. Who would ever thunk it? But before we go any further, let's take a pause. It's a new thing in a podcast where if somebody has music, we're going to try to play a little sample of them. Cause I know some of y'all are too lazy to get in Google and look these people up. So I'm going to meet y'all there halfway. You got no excuse. And so you guys got a new video out and single and all that. Tell me about it. Tell me what's the song called and what it means and stuff.
The song's called Trouble. And Zandy started it. She just wanted to write a rock and roll song. And so that's kind of where it came from. But then it kind of took a turn and it became kind of an anthem or for anything that you have, that when trouble tries to get in your way, you can kind of listen to this song. And
there you go. Don't bite the hook, people. Here we go. We're going to play it right now. This is Trouble from the New Respects.
Keeps on knocking in my front door. Well, this time I wanna be done.
All right, we're back. What'd y'all think about that? Leave a comment. Leave something on their MySpace page. Go find that.
Black people meet.
Yeah. Oh no. Christian mingle single. Dude. Plenty of Christian blackpeople.com. That's like all the ones in the one time. So anyway, sorry, we got off topic there. But go check them out. What's your Twitter and Facebook before we get too far along?
Everything is just the New Respects.
Okay, so you can find them on there. Tell them you heard their music on this here little podcast. And yeah, show them some love. Hey, here's an idea. Go buy their music too. You know what I'm saying?
That would be awesome.
You know what? I learned something this week. They used to call it stealing. Now they call it streaming.
That's very true.
Okay, just food for thought. Now, granted, I'm as guilty as anybody when I say that, but that's how far they've got it into the culture that I don't even think it's stealing no more.
It's just streaming. Yeah.
So, okay, so you guys, now, you play a show at Mercy Lounge, and this is like an old school story. Like, it doesn't happen anymore for people.
Yeah.
You know, this is a very, like, you know, discovery kind of story. So tell me that whole deal. Like, I was kind of there, but I didn't know it. And
yeah,
but that's beside the point. But how's it go? You work for 6 months, you play one show, your first real show downtown, and right. What happens?
Yeah, so actually you played a bigger part than I think you realize. We lost our bass player because we had extra people in the band towards the beginning, and I remember you came into a rehearsal and we were debating, like, I think we're just going to have to bring in a bass player for shows. And then you're like, nuh-uh. Like, Lexi, you get on the bass. And we were like, okay. And then she picked up a bass, and the rest is history.
Well, that's on her. So, she embraced the opportunity and the challenge, which I knew she kind of – I had a feeling that she would, because I saw her playing keys. Mm-hmm. So it's like – it's not like she's going from no musical background.
Right.
Like, she knows music.
Yeah.
So, and especially if you play keys. Like, if you play keys, it's an easier to transition to anything.
Right.
Because everything's visual. You know, you have it burned in your brain, like, what, you know, the scale looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, Bruno was the same way. And, like, I made him play the bass in the same way because of Ian. Because Ian got in trouble. Yeah. And matter of fact, he got in trouble and got grounded and couldn't play in the band no more. But we had gigs booked. So, I told Bruno, I said, buddy, he's like, what was he, 14? He was a freshman. And we're playing in the front of the whole gym, in front of everybody. And so, Bruno, guess what? We got 3 songs, and we got no bass player, and you're the odd man out. So, you're going to have to play the bass. And so, I was like, can you do it? He goes, yeah, I think so. I think I can. And so, he got with my dad and learned 3 songs. And ever since then, he's been a bass player. So, that's the start of his story.
You're just bringing up bass players.
I'm just like, look, somebody has to do it, okay? Now, even now, like, he doesn't really think of himself as a bass player at all, does he? Like, that's the main thing people know him for playing. But he does not, like, his brain doesn't work that way. He thinks way more along the lines of he's like a guitar player or a Hammond player.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's always been sort of his mindset. Yeah. But bass is just something he did on the side.
Well, I feel like that kind of stuff, it makes you come to it at a different angle than, like, a bass player would. I think that's why our band kind of works. It's because none of us are, like, musicians in the sense of, like, growing up taking lessons and all that jazz. But, like, I grew up playing drums, but I stopped for a long time, and then Lexi only has been playing bass for the last, like, 2 years. Zandy, she took lessons super late, probably like 9th grade, and then took it for a year, then taught herself the rest. So I think our approach is kind of different, just because we don't know a lot. And I think that works for us.
Well, tell me, you guys have a lot in common with, like Callie and Phoebe do, in that I'm always amazed by when somebody's not affected by, like, the culture of music that sort of everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, there's a lot of stuff that I would think was, like, household music, household names and rock and roll that you would be like, oh, what is that?
Right.
So very fresh and open, and, like, you know, you weren't, like, tainted by all this influence. Because a lot of times what happens is, you know, somebody like me who is really influenced by certain things can sound too much like those things.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not careful.
Yeah.
Especially when you're young. But with you guys and with Callie and Phoebe, it's like they were so like uninfluenced by stuff that like they had their own sound.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw when I saw you guys as well, is it was like, I didn't know at the time, but you did have your own sound. And when you dig in and you talk to you guys, you start to figure out, oh, this is part of the reason why.
Yeah.
It's because you're not like overly influenced by like a Led Zeppelin or
right.
or Coldplay or whoever, you know? So what was like, what was your household music that was shown to you? What yeah. did you hear growing up?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of variety growing up. We were pretty sheltered, but it was a lot of like Kirk Franklin, Fred Hammond, C.C. Winans, so a lot of gospel music, and then Motown. So those were like the only really influences that we had in the sense of like consistent music as we grew up around okay. the house.
So tell me about, and I think I got into this with Terrence a little bit when he was on the show, but tell me about being typecast as a black drummer.
Oh, man.
Like, what is that like for you? What does that even mean for people who don't even know what that means?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, they can kind of subconsciously assume that I play like a quote unquote typical church drummer just because I look like one. So it's like a lot of fills, mostly just like a lot of fills. And I'm like the opposite of that just because... although I did grow up, when I first started, I did start playing in church, but I was super young. And then when we moved to a different church, the music there wasn't like your typical, black church. So growing up, I was still like hearing different drummers than, and different styles than, what most like gospel chop drummers grew up listening to.
And if you want to get into your YouTube and look up Gospel Chops, you'll see what I'm talking about. But I always think it's funny because, like, I'll be with Terrence or you or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if we're sitting somewhere and somebody doesn't know you, they'll be like, they'll ask you about Questlove. Mm-hmm. Or they'll ask you, like, about the one basic questions.
Right.
Know? Like, the two or three, like, oh, do you play gospel?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh. Especially when white people do it. I'm like, guys, you're burying yourself. You don't even know it. But asking those questions.
Well, for me, I was just talking to Terrence about this. I'm having to like learn to even have an appreciation for it because sometimes I felt less than because I couldn't do that and people expected me to. So when I would get up there and like play the way I did, I never had people like, oh, you can't do that. But when people would assume something and then you couldn't live up to it, it's like, dag.
It's almost like a letdown,
right?
Like for them and their expectations, which is not even warranted to begin with, but still.
But I'm grateful for it now, though, because I'm happy that I don't play that way because it again just separates.
It does. I mean, you have your own playing style because of that, you know. And I always say, like, somebody's greatest strength can also double as their greatest weakness, and like it can be perceived that way. It's like at first, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. But then it comes into, like, oh, but look what he can do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's unlike any other drummer in his class or whatever because yeah. he plays his own way.
Right.
You know, you know, tell me a little bit about your approach to the drums, and we won't get on this too much,
yeah.
podcast listeners, but we got to go through a little bit.
We have to.
So, like, I watch you play, and, like, when I see you play, I say, okay, here's a guy who has really, really natural time. Hmm. Like, you don't have a problem with... consistency, and if it's 120, like, you're going to play 120, you know, the whole time. You don't go up and down or whatever, which in my life, and when I was younger, I was all over the place. But that's just mostly because the music that I listened to was very ebb and flow, and it would start off slower than it would be by the backside of the song.
Right.
That was just the way that kind of music was. So it took me years to understand, like, to learn how to play to a click. Like,
yeah.
I never did it because yeah. I didn't have to. Until you get in the studio that first time and you realize that you can't do it,
right.
That's the only time you're going to freaking learn to do it.
Yeah.
You know? But now I can because it's more and more of those situations have popped up, and you just, you know, every church gig you do now is on a click, unfortunately. Yeah. So you have to be able to do it or you're not going to get those jobs anymore. But you have really consistent natural feel and natural time, and... I think just creative there's a creativity towards going back to like not being necessarily overly influenced by anybody, but like the way that you sit down the kit to me is like somebody who never saw anybody else do it, but this is just how you sat down and did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the what you do on the toms and like your tom grooves, like I suck at that stuff. Like I really struggle. Like that I avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
Because I don't particularly like, I haven't ever been particularly good at it, so it's not like I like to do it. But when I hear you do it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's such a natural sounding.
Thank you.
So tell me about your approach when you sit down the kit. Like, how are you thinking about serving the song?
Yeah. This question is always interesting to me because I don't really think about it a ton. And then I feel like there's so many guys better than me that I'm like, we want to ask them. Right. But I don't know. I think once we got into the band, I started to think more as like a band member. So, it became a lot of like playing to the guitar, which, I don't know if that's how a lot of people think, but, we were writing a lot of stuff that was pretty riffy. And, so instead of trying to just like keep a beat, on the 2 and 4 snare thing, I would kind of try to mimic what Zandy was doing on the guitar sometimes. And then with toms, it started off, I think I didn't love the way my cymbals sounded that I had.
Okay.
And I started off with like a great kit because friends of mine just bought it for me. They saw I didn't have a kit and they're like, hey, you need a kit. So the Club Custom that I play now is my first kit when I was 16. And so the drums would sound good, but I didn't love the cymbals. I guess subconsciously, I just like drums more than cymbals. So I don't hit cymbals a lot.
Yeah, John Bonham was that way. I mean, if you watch any of his drum solos from like, you know, 70s or whatever, like he didn't hit the cymbals very much in his solos.
Right.
You know, he was all about the way the drums sounded.
Yeah.
You know, and he would knock the snares down some, and he would play with his hands. He would do, you know, but he really didn't hit the cymbals in his drum solos, really. You know, it's pretty tough to do, actually.
Yeah.
To like not hit them.
Yeah.
But I guess he was in the same mindset of he preferred the way that the drums sound themselves.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I just like where they sit sonically.
Yeah.
And it's out of the way of the higher frequency. There's like, that's where the guitars and vocals and all that sits. So, I don't know. I could hear more of the toms and stuff. I don't know why I do that, but.
Well, I think you're doing a fine job.
Thank you.
So where have y'all done your recording at so far, and how's that process been for you?
It's been awesome. We've recorded the EP, or the 6 songs that we have right now with Logan Matheny and Jeremy Latita. Jeremy was producing the drummer from Leagues, and it was awesome. I think Jeremy and I'd like to think we approach drums in a similar fashion, just because I think he's a great drummer and I like his style. But so that was awesome because he doesn't have a typical approach either, whereas like he doesn't have like the quote unquote Nashville mindset. And so some of like the fills and stuff like that, that sometimes people would be like, oh, let's try something else. He's like, that's awesome. And so I think working with him was awesome. And it pushed me as a drummer, because like when you're in a band, or at least I found that I write parts that I can play. And so when you have someone like on the outside giving you ideas that are like right outside of your comfort zone, it just pushes you and makes you better. And I'm still having to practice parts that we wrote. I still can't play everything live quite yet, but we'll get there. And I think that's exciting for me because I feel like you can get stagnant really easily when you're just writing for yourself. So it was a great process and it was awesome.
Well, sweet, man. I know what you mean by that stagnant thing. It's, you don't want to live there.
Yeah.
You know, the more you're pushing yourself, the better, and the more progress you'll see, the more increases. So tell me about playing in a band with all girls, man. Just you.
Yes, yeah, it's just me, the lone wolf. I think it's literally all I know. I have four sisters, and I don't have any brothers. So growing up with four women, I think prepared, or five women plus my mom, it prepared me for this pretty well. But a surprising thing, because my world, I'm just like, I have so many like sisters and all that, and then they're friends. So I'm just like surrounded by girls most of my life. It was surprising to go out on the road and them be like very outnumbered. So it was fun. I think seeing that, it's still a bunch of dudes out there playing music, and in the bands that we've been with, I don't know, it doesn't feel like I'm alone really. But even if I was, I think I'm lucky that they're awesome, and they keep me in line, and I know how to keep them in line as well.
Tell me the difference between the two twins, Lexi and Zandy, like from your perspective of knowing them really well.
Yeah.
Like the two characters, the two, you know, personalities. Like, how different can two twins be?
they're very, very different. I think Lexi, the bass player, she's way more outgoing, and she's just like an extrovert to the max. Like, she just loves people, loves to talk to people, loves meeting new people, wants to know all about their life. Whereas Zandy is like, she's not, I guess she's kind of introverted, but she just doesn't need that to like get energy. Whereas Lexi loves that, and like she thrives off meeting new people. And then Zandy is like kind of care less a little bit. And I think I'm thankful for both of those personalities, because when you're out there talking to people after a show, you need someone you can send everybody to
yes,
to talk. And then Zandy's just pretty chill, so I think it comes out in like stage presence and all that, and I think that's an interesting vibe as well.
Yes, identical twins. I mean, I don't know if they're identical twins by science, but they look a lot alike. Yeah. So it's crazy, like the look that you guys have. I don't know a lot of bands that have like two twins that look so much alike in the front of the band like that. You know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it's pretty unique looking.
I don't know. We just got lucky with that.
Yeah, nothing. You can't take credit for it, right. But it's something you can make the benefit of.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, cool, man. So. So I've been on the road for a few months, and now what? What's kind of like the next phase of things looking like for you guys? Do you have a record or anything coming out on schedule, or how's that going?
That's the crazy thing, is there's still a lot of unknown. So we have this batch of songs that we're still trying to figure out exactly how we'll release. We know we'll probably do like a physical something for the next tour that we're out on, because people want music, which is a good thing. So we want to give them that, but we don't know how we'll release it, like in the sense of like streaming and all that jazz. But yeah, we're just going to keep writing, and then hop on the road again in the spring. We don't have all the final details yet, but the goal is to be out in the spring and, play some clubs and all that jazz.
Cool. So give me some of your favorite bands right now. Like, if you had to give me two or three things to go listen to after I leave here, like, what's really kind of getting for you right now?
The League's record is awesome. Colony House record, which I've heard some of it, but it's not out yet, but that's awesome. And then I guess I've still been living on like old school records. So like any Aretha record, like, you can't beat it. And then I'm excited about this John Mayer record. I haven't even heard it yet, but I know that
the trio
is back. So you can't, I don't know. I got to hear that. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
About
that's
that
going to
well.
Be, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So when you can leave here, you go listen to, Aretha Franklin, The Wait, with, Dwayne Allman on guitar. Go listen to that. The Wait's that old, Pulled Into Nazareth, Was Feeling About a Half Past Dead, the old band song. Anyway, Aretha cut that in Muscle Shoals, and Dwayne was on it. So there's your history lesson
history
for today.
History lesson for the day.
People. So
you should just do a music history show.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I have enough.
I feel like you've taught me so much about specifically rock and roll as well. Like, I literally didn't know anything about John Bonham before I met you. And now he's and now he's like my top three.
Oh, he's
drummers.
A beast, and you know, I don't know. I think it's just whatever sort of stuff interests you, like just dive in. Yeah. You know, like I don't think somebody should dive in the way that I dive in if it doesn't interest them, you know? Mm-hmm. But if somebody does have an interest and they do, like, you know, if somebody walks up to you and says, hey, tell me about this, like, of course I want to tell you about something I know about
right.
and spend some time, yeah. you know? But I don't know. Like I said, like, my relationship with music is more historical and more educational than it is just as a consumer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Occasionally something will crop up. And, like, obviously there are those moments. Like, I love the Avett Brothers. I go, you know, I'm a fan of them. I don't do what they do. I don't want to do what they do, but I'm just a fan of what they do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And part of that is because I can't do it. I have no, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, there's no way I can, there's no real drummer. I mean, they have a drummer, but to me, they could lose a drummer and be just as good. No disrespect, but, you know, them two by themselves and those songs are great, you know, and obviously the bass player and the cello player, but, like, I don't know. So there's always something, but it's a lot of fun to talk about. Maybe we can. Maybe I get some other musical nerd on here to talk with me and somebody that's not going to tune out halfway. But, well, cool, man. So let's see. What else do I want to talk about here? Throw something out there if you got something else you want to do. What's next for you guys, man? So do you have anything? Is your year finished up, or
the year is done in the sense of, like, everything that all the touring and stuff is
okay.
is wrapping up. I think that the thing with us is, like, you never really know,
right.
and the music industry in general is, like, things can pop up in a second, and then you'd have
exactly.
to be gone again. But right now we're done with touring, and we're just gonna be writing a lot in this kind of holiday season when everything kind of dies down and the rest of the industry shuts down for a little while. I think we're just going to be writing and rehearsing and getting ready for 2017 and seeing, making it happen next year.
Well, I think you guys have a lot ahead of you, a lot of cool, you know, situations ahead of you, man.
Thanks.
Like, just keep, the key to me is, like, how you guys practice for 6 months. Like, you worked, what, 2 or 3 days a week all day long, and, you know, you got better because of it.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, with that work ethic, if you can hang on to that work ethic, there's nowhere that you can't go.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm excited for you guys and hopeful, and, you know, I mean, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah.
I'm excited, too. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what shakes out. You guys, go follow them on the Instagram and such. The New Respects. Mr. Darius Fitzgerald here with me today. Zandy's been on the show as well. If you've heard her, I'm sure. It's interesting because I want to interview all of you guys, you know, one at a time. That's
yeah.
kind of what I do. So I'm hoping that each interview is different.
It
and
will
I
be.
Think they will be.
yeah.
Like, I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Check out the back catalog. There's a lot of, you know what I'm saying, cool stuff on there too, I think. If you're new to the podcast and you just started subscribing, wherever you subscribe to podcasts at, iTunes or wherever, I'm trying to get it together, get my show a little more legit, and a lot of new things in the making with this thing. We're talking about starting a Patreon and doing some exclusive podcast stuff to add on to the regular show hour here. Trying to create more content and do more stuff. So I'm still figuring all that out. So give me some time. If you got any ideas of what do you think would be a cool thing for that, feel free to shoot me a DM or whatever, and we'll go over it.
Slide into the DM.
Slide into them suckers. Slide in there like Ricky Henderson stealing second base. Ain't that Ricky Henderson? Didn't he steal a lot of bases? Hopefully I'm not wrong on that.
I don't know.
That's going back. That's baseball history.
That is. And my first game I've ever, like, sat down and watched was the World Series. And
the last game of the World Series?
Yeah.
You know, it takes a Game 7 where two teams hadn't won in 75 years
right.
or better for baseball to be interesting to me.
Yeah.
But especially now that they can't jack the ball out the freaking park anymore like they used to when
yeah.
everybody was roided to the gills. But think about it. You know what's crazy about baseball? And I love baseball. I've watched many a game, Atlanta Braves game with my grandfather over the years. But that was kind of in the glory days of baseball, you know, like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and those guys. And like any minute they could jack one out the park.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, you still can now, but, and I'm all for guys, you know, not taking steroids or whatever, but the irony of the whole baseball cleaning itself up. Okay. And taking steroids out of the game is now you have a more boring game because right. the pitchers have taken back over.
Right.
Like, have you noticed now the pitchers are slanging out here right now?
Yeah.
And it's because, hey, Barry Bonds ain't waiting on base, ain't waiting to come up. They don't have to walk him every time. I remember the last couple years of his career, they walked him every time he came to the plate. And they're like, we're going to just send your fat ass to first base, and you're not going to jack one. You're not going to jack one on us. You just walk over there. They're going to send a pinch runner over here. But that was the Barry Bonds gimmick for a while. And right. if you did throw it, he would jack it out of the park. You know, it was the craziest thing. And, like, I don't know. I've become a kind of a casual baseball fan now. But the Cubs and Indians story was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty epic.
Now think about this, though. Somebody said this. The Cubs, okay, they got their World Series win. The Indians are now exactly where the Cubs were.
Right.
Like, they went from complete, you know, villains in this conversation.
Yeah.
Because if the Indians won and they crapped on the Cubs in the World Series, that would have been bad, right? But now the Indians are the favorite.
Right.
It's like, oh, they got to get it next because they're the next in line. 70-something years, is that right? So, I don't know. But we can go on and on about that craziness, too.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's crazy because I forget baseball has been around that long.
Oh, man, it goes on back.
It's crazy.
You know? Oh, man. It's a great sport. I think now, it seems to me that football is kind of taking its spot a little bit, you know, as far as America's game. Mm-hmm. More people are watching football
right
now, but there's just something about baseball. When you're watching that, you're like, yes, I want a hot dog.
Yeah.
I want some peanuts, some popcorn, and a cold beer, and I want to sit out here in the sun and watch this.
Right.
It's weird. It's just something about it. Like, we went to many a Sounds game over the years, and you know, we wouldn't hardly watch the game. You know, we would just be hanging out there. It's just a great place to hang out.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I think that just about does it for this time. Like we said before, thank you very much for tuning in. Darius, thank you for giving me an hour of your time.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime, brother. So, we'll see y'all next time for Mr. Darius Fitzgerald. I'm Taylor Jones. See you later.